Labradoodles, Camp Tiki Hama, and attaches. You know that's right. Psych Season 2, Episode 9, right about now.
I've heard it both ways.
And welcome back to I've Heard It Both Ways. I'm your friendly neighborhood backcracker, Dr. Joe. With me riding shotgun in the blueberry, as always, is my partner in crime, Aloe Vera. How's it going, buddy? It's important this time. It's been hot out.
Very dry. I'm in, basically top floor, so heat rises. Putting in about like 3 air conditioners this week. It's been warm. We're surviving. We're grinding. And we're here to talk Season 2, Episode 9, Bounty Hunters.
Yeah, so this was an episode I pose this question, we start every show off with it, did we like it? And I think we always like them, but is it better than we remember, Billy? And for me, it's about on par. Not one of the better episodes of this season, but it's just sort of right there, that meaty part of the curve.
Not slagging off, not falling behind. It's a little bit less than I remembered, but it's still really good. Yeah, obviously it's very good. It's a psych episode, but it's just a little bit less than I remembered it. A little bit less rapid fire jokes, but kind of an important episode plot wise. We'll get into that, but overall, I enjoyed the hell out of it, obviously.
Yeah, this is 100% a story episode. This is really focused on the crime and sort of figuring out the true motive and the true suspect in this one. So this was kind of fun in that sense, where the interaction between Sean, Gus, and Dwayne Tancana, right, and trying to actually prove his innocence throughout this episode. So it was very story driven. The comedy was there, but it wasn't, like you said, it wasn't as rapid fire as some of the other episodes have been. And I didn't think the references, I enjoyed the Roadhouse reference, the Patrick Swayze, but it didn't have sort of the rapid fire or even the same level of references that we're used to.
Yeah, it felt like this might have been written earlier in season two, and it just happened to be episode 9, because where they were a few episodes ago was a little more further along with their storytelling and their joke making, but still quite a few that we got written down. So
yeah. So let's talk about the case real quick. So the synopsis: Juliet asks Sean and Gus for help in capturing an accused murderer who escaped from her. They track the man down, but soon discover he is innocent, and they try to find the real killer. But things are complicated by dun dun dun, the bounty hunter. So this was. I think, while maybe not the funniest episode of the season or one of the home runs, as you said, it was an important one because we get a couple of threads that get tugged on in this episode, especially between Sean and Juliet, but also with Juliet overall, because she's got a wild arc in this one, where you really do feel for her character through a large part of this episode. And I feel like we've gotten a couple of these, especially in the If You're So Smart, Why You're Dead. Like, Juliet's like taking the case on by herself, and like she needs a little bit of help from Sean there, and she gets a lot of help from Sean in this one. Mm-hmm. So we're really starting to see, I think, her character really just, even though we feel like she's hit her stride, they're still making her grind it out a little bit.
Yeah, and we saw this a little bit with Lassie from, I believe, Earth to Starbucks, where he needed a solid win. And, it takes him a while to warm up to Jules, because he's ready to have her ride in the pine. We even see this in Feet Don't Fail Me Now, where he's having her getting coffee, treating her like a rookie. One of the greatest episodes of all time. We'll get to that when we get to it, though. But, yeah, so, she needs a lot of help in this one. She's down the dumps. We've all screwed the pooch at a job at one point or another. And you kind of need to pick me up. You need a good win. And, they get it for her.
Yeah, so that was a good narrative to this episode, I think, because she really showed some great range too, with her character. Just the down and out stuff, the assembling, dissembling of her gun as a stress, as a coping mechanism. So it was a really, even though like she wasn't at the top of her game character wise, she was at the top of her game acting wise. you know, I felt in this episode. So that was pretty important. So this was, oh, well, Jesus, you know, William, I know we took a week off and we've forgotten everything here. What the fuck is our process?
Oh, it starts with the holler and ends with the cream skull. And this time in between little Thundercats.
Oh, yeah. Oh, gee, you know,
we're into the holler. You know, I'm a little behind on the banners, but you know, this is mainly an audio medium. FYI, I signed up for Anchor today. Well, I did all the official stuff, put all the podcasts on, and then realized I put them in as one 18-hour episode. So I got to redo it and post them a little bit by a little bit. But by the end, I don't know how much they allow you to post in a week, but they'll be up soon, very soon. At least episode one and four, one through four, probably tomorrow.
Oh, so. Tremendous, tremendous. Oh, that 118, that's, you know, that's a Rogan-esque length, you know, podcast right
that's
there.
That's only like 4 or 5 days, so.
Yeah, right. So so let's dive in with the cold open here before we really dive into the episode. So I love this because you just see Sean and Gus are sitting out in front of the station, you know, eating their ice cream, and then you see you see this badass-looking dude in a vest, and he's just, he's got some dude, you know, cuffed up, and he's dragging him to the station, and Sean is just in awe, as you'd expect, because, you know, this type of a super cop, as he says, is right in his wheelhouse. So they're both sort of dumbstruck, and we get a little wink from the bounty hunter here, and then Henry comes out in his uniform, and he's all cock of the walk, and he's a little upset that Sean and Gus are so smitten with the bounty hunter.
Yeah, it happens with the firefighter as yep. well in one of my favorite episodes. I did everything in my power to keep you off the pole show. So he hated the fact that he was trying to be a superhero at one point. Like, yep. come on.
Yeah, come on, Henry, slow down. But I get it, because that's another theme throughout this episode, is that every cop hates fucking bounty hunters and vice versa, right? So we got a great little exchange here where Sean just says to Henry, "We were just checking out that super cop," and Henry goes, "That's no super cop, Sean. That's a bounty hunter." And Sean goes, "What's that? A cop with a cooler name?"
Yep.
And it was just awesome. And so their fascination, you know, with this bounty hunter is pivotal, because that's sort of how the episode starts, where, you know, they're at the station, and you know, so what we get, this is sort of the start of the Juliet narrative here, where there's sort of like a little briefing that's going on, and you know, they're talking about an escaped murderer, you know, is on the loose, and they have to find him because he's been accused of murdering someone's wife, and he escaped while in police custody. And we find out that officer was Juliet, so he escaped Juliet. She let him go, and so that's sort of what we were talking about there with Jules just sort of being down and out, because that's a pretty big fuck up, you know, that we don't typically see from really any of these characters, but especially Juliet. I mean, that's a prime time level screw up there. And so, you know, the chief is away, Lassie's in charge. So he sort of benching Jules, but Jules is able to sort of goad him right into hiring Sean and Gus to help out with the case. So they come in, and who else is also been hired on this case, Billy?
The bounty hunter, bird is the word, David Cassidy.
Yeah. So what happens is, so Juliet,
by the way, quickly, why don't we like David Cassidy? He do something dumb.
No, I don't. So I was looking up David. We don't like Kevin Sorbo.
There we go.
Sorbo is the actor.
Oh.
And it's not, he's a very opinionated individual whose views are not.
All right, well, then he can go to hell, but hell yeah. Of a character, I'm sure.
yes. So we won't get into that. But so Kevin Sorbo plays the bounty hunter. So what we have here is, you know, Juliet is she's down and out. She wants to bring in Sean and Gus to help him with the case. But the husband of the murdered wife is pissed off that the cops let the murderer go. So he hires a bounty hunter who happens to be the very same bounty hunter that we see, you know, in the cold open. So Sean and Gus are in awe, but Lassiter is fucking pissed, especially because he's drinking out of Lassie's coffee.
That's my goddamn cup of coffee. Lassie, even, you know, we get the breakdown after, you know, he kind of throws it in their face that the pretty little lady detective screwed it up for him. And Lassie puts the ranking of, you know, what is it? Cops are here, psychics are here, bounty hunters are here. We beat them by a knuckle. So they're outranking them just a little bit. So Lassie hates, you know, these guys. He hates birds. So nice little dynamic set up there. So, you know, kind of like in wrestling, you know, I talked about this with Ted Lasso, multiple feuds going on right now. Yeah. You got all sorts of different things happening in this episode. So it is an exciting episode. I just think it's a little less comedy driven than most of them.
Yeah, it falls just a touch flat in that aspect. But from a story perspective, you know, there is a lot going on here. And so Sean and Gus, you know, all the sort of the players are all in the same room together. And Sean and Gus decide to go talk to the husband of the dead wife because they want to find out if the bounty applies to everyone. They want to become bounty hunters. And so while they go in there to sort of, you know, get that piece of information before they, I mean, who are we kidding? They're going to take the case anyways. But Sean gets a Sean gets a whiff of something here, right? Right? Little smell, was it
kangaroo paste from down under?
From down under. What's that? Was it like mango or
kangaroo paste?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's mango and
it's something, but it's got a very, very nice fruity smell.
Yeah.
Right. And Sean is obsessed with this stuff because he's been dying to get it for his. He's always talking about his hair.
About everybody's hair. Hair's already been mentioned in this episode for, what's his name there? Bird.
Yeah. So this kangaroo paste, this is a subtle little thing that the show does that I like. Where
ginger blossoms.
There we go. Where it's just a subtle little thing, like reference date, you get right out of the rip that you don't think is going to play any significance because you think it's just Sean riffing about his hair. But this kangaroo paste and the ginger blossoms is going to, you know, play a big role in solving this case, later on. So, you know, what this episode is about is that Sean and Gus, right? It's just them living out a childhood fantasy of becoming, you know, bounty hunters. They really want to help Jules out here. And so they get some information from Jules that he actually has some, Dwayne Tancana, who's the murderer, has some family nearby. So they go to investigate a local restaurant and he happens to be there. Right. So we get a clash between Sean, Gus, Bird and Tancana. And this is sort of where the episode now takes off, because this is where we get really any comedy we get in this episode is between these three characters, where it's Sean, Gus, and Tancana. So the amazing thing is that this dumb oaf, right? This is one of the things that bother me, was able to escape everyone.
I don't think he's a dumb oaf though.
Well, he kind of is. He's like, I mean, could you imagine like his character just being able to escape whenever he wants, like from any, like I get him escaping from.
He's crafty. He's a crook.
Yeah, he's crafty. He's also got a heart condition, and he's not in the best of shape. Right, he might have some.
He's a powerhouse, though, Joe. He's built like, you know, a little bit bigger than you.
Yeah, well, yeah, he's
he'd be a fat, agile guy. You know,
true.
Will Fork, if you will, we have a buddy like that who does a ridiculous diet. He's like the most athletic guy. He's agile.
True.
He's like Jack Black.
Jack Black is very agile. He didn't strike me. So he's able to, sort of elude the big fight that happens, at the cafe. And he escapes he's actually in hiding in the back of the blueberry. And so I always love this dynamic between these three, because Gus is Gus. And all he wants to do is deliver him back to the police station, because he does not want any part of an escaped convict, let alone a murderer, right, in his car. But Tancana starts talking, right, as you'd expect any con man, any crook, you know, would do, saying, you know, it wasn't me. It was my cousin, right, saying that he actually had a partner, Del Becchio, and that, you know, he's not the one that committed the crime. And I love this little – there's this little exchange here between Gus and Tancana, where Gus goes, they caught you red-handed with, you know, the victim's jewelry. He goes, yeah, I'm a thief. That's what I do.
Yeah.
I steal things.
And I don't kill people.
Yeah. And so this is a classic. This is a classic case of Sean. Like, okay, I'm kind of buying what this guy is putting down, because things don't, you know, add up. And
yeah,
so
he smells what he's stepping in.
Yeah. So Sean's starting to believe him a little bit. Gus is having no part of it. They're driving to the police station. They're about to drop him off. They call Jules, and next thing you know, Tancana, boom, he's in the wind again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I kind of like that they don't show it. Gives you a little bit of how much did Sean actually help this guy get out. So it's a pretty good little thing there that they're sitting there, you know, all sad sacked because they got sacked by this dude. And, you know, I like Tancana. I think he's kind of crafty.
Yeah, I like his character. I just don't believe that that character could be so evasive because he's very easily caught. You know, like Sean, you know, finds out, you know, finds where he is really easily at the diner there. And then, you know, in the course of while they were talking on the way to the police station, you know, Tancana says, you know, kind of, you know, he gives away where he would be going next. Right. And that is to find Del Vecchio's hideout because he is hell bent on proving his innocence. Gus doesn't, you know, believe him as far as he can throw him. But Sean, well,
yeah. And with his bad knees, he shouldn't be throwing anybody. But it's one of those things, though, where I like the setup. I actually do like the case quite a bit.
Well, I love the cat and mouse aspect of it. I really do.
Mm-hmm. And then, you know, we get, I believe next, you know, Sean wants to take a nap, but instead they go get a houseboat. No, they go to, what's his name's houseboat, Del Vecchio's, yep. Because that's where they thought he would be. They run into Tancana there because he had the same idea. And this is where Sean kind of picks up the steam that, what's his name? Del Vecchio was working something because he did get paid, and it looked like he was on his way to receive another payment before, you know, they find out Bird's on the way, so they go dump out of the boat. They lose Del Vecchio's phone, and Tancana takes off again,
yeah.
Gets away in their boat, and then I think Bird has to pick them up on the way out because they're thumbing a ride in the middle of the water when they get stranded.
Yeah, so there was some good stuff here. Now, don't get me wrong. I do love the cat and mouse aspect of it because that was, I think, the fun of the episode was them just sort of constantly trying to, you know, track this guy down and doing so. You know, it's just, you know, any, you know, I just whatever. But you know, on the boat there, you know, they found the evidence that at least puts Del Vecchio at the scene of the crime. So, mm-hmm. You know, this, you know, maybe there is some credence there. And as you said, you know, Gus finds a cell phone that's in Del Vecchio's, but because they had to dodge, you know, and get away from Bird, they jump in the water, the phone gets waterlogged. And so now the only real piece, you know, of evidence of where, you know, Del Vecchio might be next seems to be, you know, no pun intended, washed away. But you know, Tancana, you know, escapes again, and so Sean and Gus, you know, they're back at the police station. They see Jules; she's down and out, and they meet her at a cafe, and she's just like she's given up. She's just like, you know, she's sort of in that state that we all get sometimes when we're like, you really fuck up. You just, it's just like, you know, your hope is lost kind of thing, you know, and she's just sort of venting and getting everything off her chest, and she just sort of walks away from the case, and she leaves all these, you know, photographs of you know, the crime scene. You know, she's going, you guys go nuts, whatever, I'm done. And we get a real nice clue here where they're looking at a crime scene photo, and there's a tattoo of the name, what we think is the name Barb, right? Barb on the back of Tancana's neck. And Sean realizes it's actually not the name of a person, but it's the name of a bar. And this is one of my favorite scenes.
Bar 13, actually. Yeah. And that's why it was Barb, not Barb from Stranger Things fame. Burb. But yeah, Burb. No, but the scene when, like, well, you know, because Gus is like, oh, it's a nice girlfriend. And Sean goes, you're brilliant. Even though that seems kind of sarcastic because it's a bar. They go to the bar and, you know, you said it's fantastic, so I'll let you tell it. But I do love, because I don't think this was in your notes, when they go in there and the guy's like, I don't know what fraternity you're pledged to, but you better get out of here before they fucking kill you. Because it's a legit biker bar. And, you know, Tancana, I can't believe, I don't get the non-love for Tancana. I figured you would have loved Tancana on every angle because he's a fellow thick huss.
No, I love Tancana. The part I don't find believable is his... you know, his mad and elusive score is like a 99.
I mean, he's chubby agile guys, man.
Yeah, he's a real slippery fuck. That's for sure. No, I love Tancana, and he's part of
It's like a wet bar of soap.
That's right. My two favorite scenes are here at the biker bar and then at Henry's house.
Oh yeah,
which we'll get to in a moment. But so they're at the biker bar, and I mean, you want to talk about two guys not fitting in anywhere? I mean, it's like me walking into a banana republic. You know, I walk in there, they just like, okay, you should leave. There aren't going to be any slacks that fit you here, Sonny. So you get to step in, sort of thing, right? So you know, they walk into a biker bar because they know he's there, and they're asking for him. And of course, no one's giving him the answers, and so. They decide, you know, they do what I guess bikers do, and they strung Sean and Gus up by chains by their feet. So they're just hanging upside down. And Tan Canna, you know, finally shows up, and you know, he agrees to let them down under the condition that he helps that they help him, prove he's innocent. And Sean's like, yeah, I'll do it.
He has a condition.
That guy's vest.
You know? That's the best when he has the condition, because we haven't really referenced it, and I don't even know if it's in our favorite thing. But the whole thing is the vest. Is it because I don't have the vest? Is that why nobody's taking it seriously?
Right.
You know, he's asking if Jules finds him sexy. He's like, what is it? Am I missing the vest? Right. All about the vest. He gets the vest. Great moment. And they don't even show like the exchange. It just cuts to him in the next scene walking out with the vest. So it was like bim, bam, boom. He accomplished that goal. That is one of the best parts of the episode.
Yeah, and the funny thing here is with the visual, right, is because he's wearing this leather vest that's all patched up, but he's just wearing a pair of jeans and a dopey polo.
Yep.
Right? Like, I mean, it couldn't look any sillier, but he is, you know, cock of the walk. And so they, you know, Sean realizes that we, you know, our only lead now to prove that this guy is innocent is on that cell phone. We have to, try and restore that cell phone. So they go to Henry's, thinking that Henry is going to be gone for a little while, so they have some time, and they get there, and you know, Gus is trying to dry off the phone and get it working again, and then Henry walks in, and he's fucking stunned. Like, obviously, this guy he's not a good guy. What's he doing in my house? And Sean's just like, oh, he's my old camp counselor, and then just leaves the room.
Oh, it's the classic stash at Henry. We've already seen this a few times. He did it with our guy there, Nigel St. Nigel, Tim Curry. They brought the Geek Squad. They bring the crazy Yang girl there at one point. Henry's house is the place. They bring Lassie when he's under investigation. Henry's house is it's the safe house of psych.
Yeah, it's the place to be, like Anytown USA. No, it's the place to believe.
The pool room.
That's Costanza's place, yeah.
Yeah. What do they call it? The place to be.
The place to be. One second. Come on in. We have a swag? Nope, false alarm.
I needed that today.
Yeah, well, hopefully it'll still happen.
We're early. We're a half hour early today. Not to date the time of the podcast, but a little early.
A little early today. But I love this because you know Henry is going to get to the bottom of who this guy is, and he knows that he's not a camp counselor. And so, you know,
Sean, but he plays along with it. And I do love that. And he doesn't even want to know what it is that he's doing. He's just like, get him out of here before I know too much.
Right. And so, you know, Gus finally gets the cell phone working, but you can barely read it because it was one of those old, you know, crappy Nokias. Right. And so the screen is all, you know, discolored, but Sean was able to, get a couple of the letters. And it's the name of a place, but they can't really seem – they bing it, but they can't seem to find it. And then Sean says add ing at the end of it. So they find out that it's a parking garage.
Mm-hmm. Play a little game of Hangman, kind of cute. Meanwhile, in the kitchen –
I don't have a high top fade, Sean.
Oh, I love it. I didn't have a high top fade in the third grade, Sean. It comes up a few times this season. I have a high top fade right now. I just got one. Yeah. Well, they call it the David Robinson. But so meanwhile, in the kitchen, this is one of the best scenes, him and Henry going back and forth.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Which I think we'll jump into when we get to it.
Because yeah.
I want to spend a few moments there. So they figure out that the text message on Del Vecchio's phone is to a specific parking garage. So, you assume there's going to be a drop of some sort. Right. So they go there and what do they see? Del Vecchio.
Dead.
He did.
D-E-D.
And so now, like, oh shit, you know, the real killer, you know, is possibly still out there. And so that's figurative and literally a dead end. But Sean smells something and he can't quite put his finger on it. He needs the super sniffer.
Mm-hmm.
And Gus is like, no, I'm not going near a dead body, Sean. Uh-uh, no way, no way. And then he rolls the window down a little bit, and Sean is just sort of wafting.
Oh, no, he didn't.
He's wafting. And there it is. There's the smell of those ginger blossoms.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is what brings us to the reveal. It was the ginger blossoms. It was that it's goddamn kangaroo face from down under.
Down under.
From down under. So, so how does it breaks down? So Sean has this idea because they've got to find a way to you know. Sorry. So what happens here is once they figure out who it is, Bird shows up, grabs Tancana, and he's going to bring him in to the police station to get his bounty. And so Sean's like, we got to get there before him. We have to get Tancana into our custody. So, you know, A, we can collect the money possibly, but B, you know, we can't let that dickhead Bird, you know, ride off into the sunset. So Sean cooks up this the old okie doke, right? The
bait and switch, a little what's goose good for the goose, which is good for the gander.
Yeah, the attaché full of undies, you know, yeah. It's a money drop kind of thing, right?
A little banana in the tailpipe.
Yeah. So they beat them to the police station, and you know, so you've got Tancana in Bird's custody. Bird's gonna bring him in, and Sean says, we've got the money that Delvecchio was promised, and it's a lot more than what the reward is going to be for the bounty. So why don't you give us Tancana? We'll give you the money. And it's that whole, you know, you give me that first kind of thing, a little standoff.
And I'll just get to the fact that I hate this right now, because Bird's not fucking falling for that. And then afterwards,
nobody's falling for
no
that.
No one's falling. Like, so what was the reward? 50 G's?
Yep.
They're claiming there's 200 fuck the 200 grand in there because they said it was four times the amount. Get the hell! Like, I'm not. No way in hell am I not seeing the money. And obviously, Bird's not seeing the money. And then afterwards, he pulls his gun. I'm not pulling my gun. I'm going over to Sean and I'm punching him repeatedly. But like once you get that, the whole thing's out of the window. Like, none of it's believable. So, every once in a while, that's my bone to pick with Psych. They do those things where it's like, come on, stroke the pen a little bit here, make it make sense. But that was my one thing. That was my one thing.
Yeah, because that is a little like, because, you know,
get out of here.
The gullibility of some of the characters, you know, it gets very convenient, I think, for the writing, because it's sort of like, oh, we got to wrap this up here. But they make the switch, right?
Mm-hmm.
Sean and Gus get Tancana. You know, Bird pulls a gun on Sean just as Juliet. And
it wasn't even just, it was like a good 20 seconds. It took a while.
True. But eventually they come out.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they take custody of Tancana. Bird walks away, and Sean and Gus.
Oh, Bird gets cuffed and brought in.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, because he pulled the gun on police grounds. And then Sean and Gus are just sitting there, you know, Sean is just sort of, you know, just sort of, you know, having a nice little soliloquy there. And
again, goes, referencing taking a nap.
Yep. Hey, Gus goes, Sean, are you forgetting something?
And this is one of my favorite parts, because every time I watch this episode, except for the very last time I just watched it, you forget that they have to go and bust the actual killer, because it's whatever the hell his name is, the guy with the kangaroo paste
who murdered
his wife.
He staged
the break-in from these guys to set up the murder, and you know, Tancana's partner there figured it out. Delvecchio, is it Klaus? Who the fuck's named Klaus Delvecchio? Like, that's fucking ridiculous. Klaus von Buell. Like, what are we doing here?
I think it was George or something like that, and Sean just called
Sean called him Klaus. It was Gordon Delvecchio.
Gordon, yeah, that's what it was. There it was.
Okay, so now that's actually hilarious.
And so, yeah, so it turns out that, you know, because you remember the kangaroo paste, and that's what Cole, that's the husband of the murdered wife, was wearing in his hair. You know, he's the one that killed his wife. And so I think it was a thing of convenience. These guys were breaking into their house. And so he's like, oh, I guess I can kill my wife now. So let's get right into it. Yeah, I want to jump into the least memorable moments before we jump into the most memorable ones here, because this. I don't know. This is, I think, my real big issue, more so than, you know, Tancana being a slippery spitfuck, is that we don't ever really, like, there wasn't a good motive for Cole killing his wife.
I don't think you necessarily need it, because that wasn't really the story.
But it would have.
Who knows?
I think it would have just added to it a little bit more, because it's like,
maybe,
Cole. Oh, he was planning to kill his wife, and it just so happened that these guys were breaking into his house. And he was able to capitalize on that moment to kill his wife. Like, I feel like maybe his wife had, if we just gotten a little bit of information, like, instead of using
I don't think you could have done that, though, because if you did, then you would have put him as a suspect numero uno early. So I actually do really like that, like, because, you know, people just, you know, people murder. There's a murder happening, unfortunately, right now somewhere.
Yeah, you could have used a cold open, just kind of set it up a little bit where you could see her having a conversation with someone, maybe about, you know, blackmail or whatever, nothing that might, you know, some sort of crime that wouldn't give away that it was her husband. And then you see her die, because they've done that before, where the actual murder or the case happens in the cold open.
It does, but like, it would have been too coincidental for that to happen. I think that's the only way that you could have played it necessarily. Yeah. I do agree it is weird to have a murder with no provocation, but the murder was just kind of like, it was secondary
to, and we've had that a couple of times. Mm-hmm. And I think those are like the past couple of episodes where we've done here is that the murder has been sort of secondary to something else. And Bill, you're going to get your wish.
Yeah.
You're going to get your wish. Come here, kiddo.
We got some wagons.
Yeah. Come on up. Come on up. Here we go. Aww. Squirt. Can you say hi, Billy?
Hi.
You say, you know, that's right. Say, come on, son.
She's the shyest on cam here, but on your phone, she's a superstar.
Can you say goodnight to everyone? Right here. Say it right here. Say goodnight. Can you say for show? Say I for show. All right, kiddo. I love you. Have a good night's sleep, kiddo.
Ah, the most adorable podcast in the DSG, without question.
And so, I think that's because I like a good murder mystery. So I like it when
Who doesn't like a good whodunit?
I like it when the murder is still like is very much a focal point of, you know, what they're trying to do. But like I said, I did like the cat and mouse aspect of it. I did like. Tancana again. That's just a me thing. Mm-hmm. But outside of that, I think we've talked enough about sort of our least memorable moments. Let's get into our most memorable, our favorite episodes. And you know, we've already mentioned a couple of these, like just the sheer contempt that Lassie and Henry have towards the bounty hunter is great, because they get a hair across their ass for this guy, and deservedly so, because he's a real knob.
He is a knob. He's drinking the coffee. He's stealing their cases and whatnot. But it is nice to kind of put that parallel of bounty hunters and psychics, because Lassie hates psychics. And we learned from one of the first episodes that Henry hates psychics as well, because he thinks they're lazy. They don't need a private eye license, all that. He already hates private eyes. So, bounty hunters are the lowest of the low for them. So that's a good establishment to kind of get the feud going here.
Yeah, so I love that. And as I mentioned before, you know, anytime just the dynamic between Sean, Gus, and Tancana was great. But getting back to Henry's house, so this was probably my favorite scene, because Henry is just he's always in detective mode, and so he's just sort of he's going along with what Tancana says, but you know he's probing him at the same time. And so Tancana said he was the musical director or the entertainment director at the camp, and you know he'd write songs. You know, for the, you know, the kids to sing. And so Henry goes, oh, why don't you sing me one of the songs? So, oh, no, I was such a long time. He goes, sing
it. Tiki Hum. I also love the, it's Camp Tiki Mama?
Tikihana.
Tikihana. And the best part is they make it a real camp later in the show.
Oh, that's right. Because isn't that
that's the one that Friday Tuesday the 17th or whatever the hell it is.
Yeah,
the
Foggy Nelson there.
Yeah, the murder mystery at the camp. Yeah. They actually use Camp Tikihama. So, and the way Sean said it, you can kind of be like, I guess. And then Gus was literally just like, yeah, Camp Tikihama. So
yeah, so that was just funny, because him just like making up the words to this song and the
looks that Henry. Tikihama, oh, what we are.
Something near and something far. right? Which leads to like, I think Tan Cannon, I mean, he was there, like, he was a really good character. He didn't have a ton of comedic lines. But the best thing was when he was talking with Henry about Sean, he goes, oh, yeah, Sean, he was a great kid, wonderful kid, lots of team spirit, a real stickler for the rules.
Oh, really?
And that was like the fucking dead, what's the word I'm looking for? Like the giveaway.
Dead giveaway? Dead giveaway.
that these guys are, making this shit up, you know? So that was great. The super sniffer scene was great. Before we get to the biggest one here, though, what was you had something here with Sean and food?
Oh, the food. What was the food? Hang, I wrote that down because. Oh, wait a second. I fucking forget now what the food was. How did I wrote that down during the show for this purpose. Come back to me. I might be able to get it. I should have wrote down more.
So I think the biggest, most important scene of all this episode was the very last scene. So, we had seen a very vulnerable Jules throughout the episode, and you sort of see, Sean is, we've seen over the past couple of episodes where they're getting a little bit closer. Oh, okay, go.
Sorry, I remember now. I was going to forget. It's when he's breaking down the case with the food, when he's able to identify why Tank Han is there, because he's like, oh, those two truckers, they're grappling over the ketchup. They ordered the burgers. That guy over there, the waitress already dropped off the Russian dressing. He's the one with the Reuben. And look what he's making in the corner over there. Egg whites. That's not a menu at a greasy spoon like this, I'll tell you that. So that's when he figures out Tank Can is there. And I just think that was a perfect display of his psychic powers. His powers of observation at work. Right there to figure out, boom, he's here.
Yeah, that was a great, and it was a good bit of detective work. We, we get some episodes where we get a lot of that, some episodes where it's, comedy really drives it. So yeah, that was a good little part, because that's how they figured that, as you said, Tan Cannon was there, and that's sort of right when Bird showed up and the melee ensued. But the biggest moment really is at the end, when sort of Juliet is sort of thanking Sean for his help and believing in her and all that. And they get, they literally couldn't get any closer than they actually did from a nice deep French.
Oh yeah. They went for it. Sean went for it. And then she basically gave him put on the big red light, the big brakes, saying, yeah. Sean, if you're doing this, this is what we were talking about before. What's that? A mistake. But Sean, give him credit. He went for it early. Season 2, and this is what makes a great show. And this is why I think, Jim and Pam suffer in The Office, is because they got them together too quickly. And I think besides
that, and Pam sucks.
But. Hey, you know what? I rewatched the whole thing recently. She's not as bad as you think. The last few seasons, she does kind of suck. But I don't think she's as bad as people remember her. I think she gets a little bit of a bad rap. But like this show, and even like I'm not a big fan of Friends towards the end. But they at least know if you get the couple together early, you got to break them up. They kept this together. I think they get together at the end of season 5. They keep it secret in season 6. Season 7, the way they get back together, I hated. But for the most part, this is one of the best ways to deal with that love relationship throughout either a drama or a comedy, the whole way, because they kind of keep the tension there, and they hit it at the right point. They break up, they get back together. So, they get married, they get engaged in the finale. So I think it's, this was the first real, move Sean makes, and she shuts it right down, which I think is great. I think it's great.
Yeah, because you can't have that, because that very well could have torpedoed the show. It could torpedoed the series.
Oh, yeah.
And they did a great job, because they sort of play on this, timing never really matched up for us sort of thing, because in season 3, we get Abigail, right?
Lytar.
Man, she's cute as a button. Cute as a button, that Abigail Lytar. And then, she's with your guy there with the eyeliner.
Declan Rann. Declan Rann.
Right. And then she's with Lumberg, episode, right? Mm-hmm. So the timing never matched up, and that works, because there was still, even when they're seeing other people, that tension was still there, and you're always constantly rooting for them. And so when they did pull the trigger on it, it was the perfect point, because the series was already more than halfway over at that point. So yep.
And to your point, if they had gotten together any earlier, it would have hurt the show. And it wasn't like The Office, where you had 19 other characters
right.
that can carry it when, you know, Jim and Pam get together and kind of stink.
Right.
This whole show is Sean and, you know, the main love interest, the only love interest, the only relationship we get besides Gus being like me, swinging and missing like he's friggin' Corey Hart, or who's another guy who swings and misses a lot of the plate? I don't know, Aaron Judge.
Yeah, Mark Bellhorn.
Yeah, just swinging for the fences, not getting a lot of contact. So, but I think that. Oh, by the way, quickly right here, you know, we weren't here on last week for the big news, Psych Movie 3, and I love the first two. So I'm guessing This Is Gus means he's going to marry the woman. I forget what her name was, but that's his real life wife, actually.
Oh, really? Yes. Again, cute as a button.
Well, right on my alley.
Very attractive woman.
She's hot.
Yeah, so when that comes out, we're going to have to dedicate – I mean, we'll just – you know, we're going to dedicate an entire episode to that, because I can't wait. I was bummed I couldn't – when the second Psych movie came out, I was supposed to be on. I couldn't join you guys at the time, but I can't wait. So I'm going to absolutely love a Gus-centric, you know, Psych movie and how they're going to do it. And I hope, I hope and pray that, you know, Lassie is able to have a bigger role. His recovery is hopefully, you know, improving such that he can, because that was a real tearjerker in the second movie, is having him there and his presence. And so I'm very excited for that one. So with that, let's jump into a little Thundercats. Oh, what we need is the the Jim Duggan 2x.
Oh, man. I'll go. You know what? I actually I made a faux pas recycling. I threw some wood in the recycling thing, and they didn't take like half my recycling this week. So.
Oh, that's just the fucking worst. I threw a wreath in once, and you know it was like Christmas time, and they just left it there, and that fucker was full. So yeah, it was another 2 weeks. Yeah, it was another 2 weeks before they came and got. But anyways, so favorite characters. We both.
It can only be one here. It's like Highlander.
Yeah, Sean was, you know, he was the star, and usually, you know, Gus is a lot more prominent, but he just sort of played the kind of guy. You know,
you know, they did the nickname game a couple of times. But they also did the non-nickname game, but yeah, it was a Sean heavy episode, and he carried it. You know, the whole bounty hunter, the vest, him and Jules. It was a really heavy Sean episode. He even had the flashback within a flashback at the beginning he saw Bird, and he flashed to himself as a bounty hunter in the future as a child, which I thought was hilarious.
Because he's got the vest.
He's got the vest.
He's got the aviators on. And,
yeah, apparently they do come in children's sizes.
So that was a good little image there. So some of our favorite lines, Sean was he had some real doozies here. So I'm pretty sure this is the boat from Dead Calm. And then Gus goes, great, now I have to worry about Billy Zane, too.
I think Billy Zane might be the most referenced person in the show's history, which is fitting because he is the bad guy in the final episode.
Yes, and Billy Zane and Val Kilmer, right, who both make
it. You know what, Val Kilmer, Billy Zane, and we get him early. He was in Blue Steel, Breakfast Club, fucking Flanders Naturals too much.
Oh, Judd Nelson.
Judd Nelson. A lot of Judd Nelson. So
Nelson might be number one, to be honest with you.
It's probably close. I don't know how much they reference him after, but they reference him a lot before.
They did. I mean, and you get him with the, you know, especially with the Abigail, when they're at the high school reunion, like, with the nostrils flaring too much. Judd Nelson in the Contagion one. So I love that they get these guys that they reference all the time. Those are good gets. And then what are you, the ambassador of rope etiquette? Mm-hmm. You know, when Gus has busted his nuts about not tying the boat down because it floats away and they have no way to escape. We get a nice no. And then when he's talking to Lassie, he goes, when you reprimand us, try using your feelings voice.
I've used that before too. It doesn't work. Usually it doesn't go over so hot. I tried that with an ex or two. Wouldn't recommend it.
Yeah.
I loved the somebody forgot to drink their courageous juice this morning. And then like 2 seconds later, they followed up with like someone, somebody forgot to drink their grateful juice this morning. Yeah. And then probably my favorite moment in the episode, he's having like the real panicked talk with Juliet on the phone. She's all upset, like, bring him back here. And he just like puts his hand over the phone, looks at Gus and goes, "Ooh, look, Labradoodle." And Gus goes, "Where?" Like, to me, like, as casual as they pulled that off in the middle of, like, you know, they have the criminal in the back of the car. Juliet's freaking out on the phone. They're bringing him back to the police station. He's like, "Ooh, dude, Labradoodle."
So that's like my wife. So I think it's season 6 or 7 where they're undercover for the minor league baseball team, right? The guy, there's been greenies, right? Mm-hmm. So they go to his house and Sean's on the treadmill and he's drinking the water bottle and it's been laced with greenies. And my wife's favorite scene is like, Gus, you could imagine Sean when he's on amphetamines, like he's already ramped up to an 11. And this, he's like at 20 and he's just buzzing around the house. And all of a sudden he just stops, picks up the binoculars and like looks out for a bird. And I don't know why, but that visual cracks my wife up every single time. It's, you know, sort of like this Labrador. So we just said that, you know, Gus didn't, you know, wasn't really comedic. And now I'm looking at the lot
of lines.
He actually had some good ones. And one of my favorites was right at the beginning when they're talking to Bird the Bounty Hunter. And he's like, "Hey, this is my last gig. You know, I'm going to take this money and I'm going to invest it in a bar in Key West." And Gus goes, "Who are the other investors? Tango and Cash." And the look he gives, he's so proud that he delivered that line.
Yep.
Was absolutely great. When they meet, what was Gus's nickname in this one?
Oh, Galileo Humpkins.
Galileo Humpkins.
I think he's on the Rams right now in our Madden League.
And Gus goes, "For the first time, I'm glad you didn't use my real name, Sean."
Yep.
You know, so it was just, this place isn't exactly family friendly. Just pretend we're in Roadhouse. I'm Patrick Swayze. I'm Sean. I'm Sam Elliott. You know, it's just those great little back and forths there. I think it's an attaché. The softest shell is what differentiates it from a briefcase. This is sort of at the end when they're going back between.
Yeah. And this is another one of the sneaky bits where they just argue about what something should be called or what the actual name is or the nicknamification of the got staked, got stuck. So I love when they do that. That's one of my favorite things. I try to do that. Oh my God. The brood steeped teabagged. I think my favorite one ever, and I've used it a few times, is frenemy, pretenemy, pal holes. And then the other one is when they're doing the, you get your halibut kicked,
yeah,
got smack rolled,
right.
Took a good bass whooping.
Oh man. So yeah, those guys were, you know, definitely the stars. Lassie had a couple lines, you know, Henry Guster, what are you doing? Messing around with my crap over there. You know, just classic
old guy.
Yeah, classic cranky Henry. This might be the best exchange between Gus and Bird when he's like, Bird's like looking at his bracelets. This is between Sean and Bird, I should say. And he goes, "And just so you know, these don't come in tiny." And Sean just goes, "We'll just get them in a woman's large." It's true. Blue car, a child's car. He's with those idiots, you know. Yeah. So. Just some good, you know, back and forth there between Sean and Gus, some classic stuff. But like, it wasn't like, while some of those lines were pretty funny and you know, give us a chuckle, it's not like the bam, bam, bam.
It wasn't, bam, yeah, bam. Line after line after line, yeah. Like a lot of them are.
Yeah. So let's head into the final portion of the show, William. Let's hit that yummy, scrummy creamsicle.
Okay. So Galileo Humpkins obviously is the nicknamification for this one. One of my favorites, obviously, I name Madden players after Gus all the time. He's a stud. He's a lot of money, though, so you don't want him. the retirement gag, getting shot, I fucking love this. Because it's in the Simpsons episode where they do the McBain movie.
Yes, that's right.
I'm retiring tomorrow on this boat. And then just fucking, he gets shot a ridiculous amount of times by Mendoza or Mendoza's goons. So it is a running gag, you know, and they play it off well. And even when they're on the boat and, you know, Gus is like, I'm done with this right now. And then Chuck's just like,
yeah,
the duck and like look around. It's a great gag.
It is. And they, I mean, they, He must have hit that about four or five times, where every time someone said retirement, Sean would just immediately duck out of the way because, you know, as he says, you know, every time someone says they're about to retire, he shot it. And so that was just, it's just a subtle little thing that was great. The briefcase attaché satchel gag, you know, there at the end, that was a good bit. No Henry Prick alert today. We haven't, it's been a little while since we,
you know what, I kind of think he's a, you know what, I would say he's a prick in the beginning, but, you know, bounty hunter is not a good thing to be. I mean, our guy Brick dropped in the chat and said, dog the bounty hunter doesn't seem like a good dude.
Yeah, that I get. I mean, that is like, it's not like when Sean was like wanting to read comic books and, you know, you know, wearing a cape, you know, like that was, this was like, okay, I kind of get that.
Or even being a firefighter, as several of my friends and two of the Bad League members are firefighters. Nothing wrong with being on the pole. Mac and Bria
do just a lot of pole work. Just because Mac on a pole, that don't make him a hoe, no. Right?
little Wyclef, Sean.
little Wyclef, right? Yeah, I'm hip. I'm, you know, I know some things. But that was great. We get a lot of references in this one. So Sean Cassidy. Mm-hmm. So I had to look this one up. He was a singer-songwriter. He was on the Hardy Boys, and he's the older half-brother to David Cassidy of the Partridge Family.
All right. So you drive it around on a bus.
Yeah. A little Tango and Cash. We get a
sweet, but not Franklin and Bash.
That's right. We get a sweet Judge Reinhold reference.
Oh, I love Judge Reinhold.
Which came up in the Madden chat or in the DSG chat today.
Mock trial with J. Ron Hall.
That's right. Billy Zane, as we mentioned before, Midnight Run.
Yep, a great movie.
Roadhouse and Open Water. So again, like some good references here, but not like like the past couple of episodes prior to this. I mean, those references were tight and on point. So how many pineapples, William?
Okay, for me, I'm going to go 5.75. This is one of my lower ones I think I'm ever going to have from here on out, just because the comedy was a little lackluster and the case had a couple of holes. Not holes, but the whole bird thing at the end. I'm like, there's no way that's actually going to play out in real life. You're looking at the briefcase. Like, you promised 50 grand and they have a figurative 200,000. That really weighed on me. And again, when I rewatched it a lot of the time, when we do these, I like it way better. This one, it's good. Yeah. It's really good. It's a 5.75 out of 8.
When I typed up these notes last week, I had 6.5. It's a solid B minus. But then I watched it again, and then sort of going over the notes again and everything, I think it's about a 6 for me. You know, it's like it's right in that C plus B minus range.
It's 6, you know, but it's thick.
It's a thick 6. You know, real, you know, it's a Malden 6, right?
That's pretty good.
Yeah. So, Billy, where can the people find us, my friend?
They can find us everywhere. In a little bit, Doc will be twitching out our Madden draft. So if you want ridiculousness, go check that out at Backcracker, Shime, Davey, also twitch out. Go check us on the Dork Shared Gooniverse Facebook page. I think I got that right. Yep. And then check out all the podcasts, TLDR. They read books and they talk about them. Mostly, you know, books with pictures. They're smart, but they're not that smart. And then we have all of
One of them is only a doctor, but no biggie.
Yeah, one of them is a doctor. And then the other kid went to Northwestern and had, you know, what was it, a 5.9 a year? I don't know. I'm just kidding. That's what Shime says every time he talks about his baseball career. And then we have the other podcasts. Of course, there's this one. I've Heard It Both Ways. Then PCP, CMC, then The Big Boys. We have Dork, and we have Mac and Goo. So go check out everybody there. Check us out on Instagram. Check me out as well. Link in bio. Like, I'm one of those OnlyFans girls. But you can find link to our merch as well. All of the proceeds go to Frank Says Hi for every shirt sold. So go check it out. We have it on right now on the screen. It is green, so it doesn't look that great on Joe's green screen. But what are you gonna do? You can see his figurative nips right now.
see right through me. All right, William. So until next week, wait for it.
Frank Says Hi.
All right, I'm out.